Welcome to the Daily Actor Podcast. I'm Lance Carter, and today I'm talking to Rose McIver. You've probably seen Rose on Masters of Sex or Once Upon a Time, where she plays Tinkerbell. Now she's starring in the new film Brightest Star. It's about a guy, played by Chris Lowell, who right out of college is dumped by his girlfriend, Charlotte, played by Rose. So he reinvents himself into the man he thinks that she wants. Trouble is, along the way, he ends up falling for his friend, Lita. I like the film a lot, and the cast, including Rose, is great. The movie's directed by actress Maggie Kiley, and in the interview, I asked Rose what it's like to be directed by another actor. We also talk about her character, how she got the part, and how she and Chris, before they even met each other, formed a bond over email. And we get into her audition for Once Upon a Time and her flawless American accent. Oh, and as an added bonus, you're going to hear my cat Daisy in the background and one of those little Facebook pop-up messages. So, there's that. And now a couple plugs. If you need a website, casting director mailing labels, career coaching, list of headshot photographers in your area, you can find all of that out on dailyactor.com. And now, here's Rose.
I really, really liked the movie. I thought it was just charming is the only word I can think of, but it's more than that, you know?
Thank you. I'm so pleased you enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I really liked about it is both female characters were very likable, you know? Like in most films kind of this genre, most films would have had your character turn into the bitch. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that was my first hesitation. When I started reading the script, I was like, okay, where's it going to go wrong? Where's she going to end up being awful? And amazingly and cleverly, they managed to show her as three-dimensional and definitely flawed, but kept her, hopefully, I was aiming to keep her likable as well.
You know, like any normal guy would be like, his head would explode trying to make choose either one of these two girls, you know, because they were just, you know, like they were flawed, but just totally, like you knew these girls, you know?
Yeah, I felt like that going into it. When I was reading the script, I thought there were people in situations that were so familiar, especially coming straight out of college and, you know, you're trying to find yourself and form your identity, and you have these big ideals that you've grown up with about what you want in a partner or what you want in a career, and then the real world happens and you realize that you're going to have to make certain compromises or change your perspective a little, and it just feels so organic to me, and I think they captured that really well in the script.
I was talking to Chris earlier, and he said you guys shot this in 18 days.
Talk about a quick turnaround.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you can't, the relationships on film, you can't really sort of tell, were you guys friends before, or how did you form that bond so quickly in order to put it on screen?
Chris and I spent a month, no, more than that, maybe like a few months, emailing backwards and forwards to kind of create a bit of a history for us and understand a bit more about each other and build in jokes and learn, you know, just it's so that when you're working on set, you can have some points of reference and you have things that you know you can mention or say before a take that will make that person genuinely laugh or genuinely connect or genuinely annoyed at you. But it's so much easier to find those and to have integrity when you've built a relationship before the 18-day shoot. So I was just fortunate that Chris was on board. You wouldn't always have an actor who was willing to donate time and energy to building that backstory. And we collaborated with Maggie and managed to build this thing that when we were filming, we were able to just extract from what we already had.
Did you guys have any rehearsal time before filming?
Yeah, we got a week in New York before we started shooting. So we used that time with Maggie really wisely. We weren't running over the lines over and over again. Maggie used the time to just kind of have conversations with us and use the lines as a starting point to talk about the scenes and talk about what we really needed to get out of the material. And we had great stimulating conversations and, you know, read through so we were familiar with everything. There weren't any surprises because we were shooting out a sequence as well. you know, you shoot out of sequence anyway, but we're also, the story is non-linear, and so it could end up very chaotic if you didn't know exactly where each scene takes place in the chronological story, so we used that time for that as well.
So how did you initially get the role? Did you know Maggie Pryor?
No, I read the script the day before I was due to fly back to New Zealand, and I really liked it, and I had one day left, and I said, is there a chance she can meet tomorrow? And so she and I went and got lunch and talked about it. And from the moment I met Maggie, I knew, you know, she's an actor as well as a director. And she has this real understanding of character and perspective that I really liked. So we just got into this kind of long, riveting conversation. And I had to leave because I had to go pack my bags. And by the time I got back to New Zealand, I knew I wanted to do it. I sent her a couple of scenes that I put down in New Zealand. And we went from there.
How is it, I guess, how do you like being directed by someone who's also an actress?
It's scary before, that's a scary title to be directed by an actor, but if you know Maggie, she just could not be less intimidating. She's so kind. I mean, what's intimidating about her is how she can remain calm and engaged and unflapped by, like, any situation. But she is so looking, it's her film, she wants us to do the best work we can, so as an actor she knows what we need and the conversations that will be useful, and she doesn't over scrutinize us, she trusts us and knows that we're trying to bring to the performance the very best that we can. So it's nice to work in an environment where you feel confident and understood. She definitely knows the language of actors.
Does she help with your performance at all? Or?
Absolutely. She first asks to see your instincts, and if that isn't in keeping with what she needs out of the scene, she'll absolutely tell you and guide you towards the right answer. It's funny because with actors you're dealing with egos and helping people to realize the character for themselves. You know, it's no use her telling us what she thinks it should be. It's she needs to ask us the questions that will bring out what she wants. And she's really wise at how she does that. Manipulates us in a lovely, lovely way.
Yeah. You know, listening to your talk, your American accent is flawless.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Did you just kind of pick it up? Because it's perfect.
Well,
you sound better than
me. Hardly. I'm not sure. You haven't seen me. Improv is the one time that sometimes that can get blown. If you're familiar with the lines beforehand, you're fine. Well, I feel like I'm fine. But when you're asked to generate material on the spot, sometimes it's not really actually the accent that's the problem. It's the idioms or the turns of phrase that aren't common parlance in the US, but that I would say in New Zealand. So those are the things that would trip me up more than anything else. But growing up in New Zealand, we had access to a ton of American and British film and television. It was a huge influence on me from an early age. And my brother and I both just had a natural kind of inclination towards accents, so I was just lucky, I guess.
When you're walking around on set and you're not, you know, doing a scene, are you staying in your American accent?
No, I'm not. I can't engage
yeah.
people in an organic way if I'm sort of thinking about that at all. So I sort of slip in and out. It's just the same way that if you're playing a murderer on set, obviously, between takes, you're not murdering people, you know?
I've played a murderer before, and I just went out and killed a bunch of people when I wasn't, you know.
Well, that's one way of doing it, you know? And I'm just like, that's the role I'm going to play.
Yeah, exactly. You are also in Once Upon a Time.
I am.
And I read that when you auditioned, you didn't know that it was actually for Tinkerbell.
It's true. I got told I was auditioning for a fairy, and I hadn't actually seen a lot of the show. Not the fairy, a fairy, and I hadn't seen the show. I hadn't been in the same place long enough to follow anything for a while, and I hadn't watched it until I got cast, so I wasn't aware that that was who I was going to be playing, which was a really pleasant surprise. I was able to go in and just completely have my own take on a character, and then inform that once I had the role with knowing everything that we do about Tinkerbell, which parts of that I was going to choose to bring to it and which parts I wouldn't.
Tinkerbell is like everyone has a vision of her in their head, you know. Does that help you or hurt you with sort of that knowledge?
What's great is there's absolutely nothing I can do about that. There's something that the costume department can do, and there's something that makeup can do. But, like, visually, I am me, and the story, Once Upon a Time, is all about the human elements to these kind of fantastical characters. So really bringing the most genuine and truthful performance that you can is the most useful thing that you can do. And the subject matter and the story will already tell the Tinkerbell story. So yes, there's parts that I tried to incorporate, like that Tinkerbell being a tiny figure was only able to host one emotion at a time, was something that Jay and Barry had created. And so I sort of like the idea with playing with big mood switches within a scene, because she's only able to embody a certain thing at once. But at the same time, you don't want that to take away from the narrative and the character journey and everybody else's character journeys. So it's a matter of marrying those ideas.
What's the worst audition you've ever had?
The worst audition I ever had was when I was 11 in New Zealand. I auditioned for a car commercial, no, an insurance commercial, and the direction was just like, sit at the car wheel, at the steering wheel, and just drive, and just drive. And I'm not a model, and I'm not able to, like, just hold one expression and just drive. And then, I mean, it was like 30 seconds, but I sort of was trying to give this very understated performance of just sitting in a car. I was like, I really don't know what they're going to take away from this. Like, what should I bring to it? But I think that it turned out they were just looking for a face, so didn't get that one, unfortunately. Devastating career loss.
What's your advice to actors?
Watch films, read books, engage with people, be an observer of people. I think that's the most useful thing that you can do. And an observer of people that aren't just actors, like when you're walking around and when you're meeting other people and the plumber that comes to fix your sink, and just see how people engage with other people and objects in a very genuine day-to-day basis, and just kind of keep the notes, keep these ideas in your head, and bring them out when it serves.
Thanks, Rose, and thank you guys for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Follow me on Twitter at Daily Actor, and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Daily Actor. Thanks so much for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.